Let's please turn your Bibles to Exodus 1:8. And last week we went to Genesis for the background of Exodus. And in that background, just for those that weren't here, what we learned is man is cursed now since Adam and Eve took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Man is cursed with rebellion. That's what they did. They rebelled against God. We want to be God. Man's cursed with that. We want to be God. Man's rebellion ultimately leads to sinning against God. And when we sin against God, we die spiritually. We're separated from Him. We'll be forever separated from Him unless we get the cure. And that cure is Jesus, we know. In the Old Testament, the cure was agreeing with God through the sacrificial system that started with just knowing that animals had to die. That's what it was. You know, in the time of Exodus, they codify exactly what sacrifices, when and where and how. Before that, for 2,500 years since the fall of Adam and Eve, it was just an innocent animal has to die to be able to submit to God that the only way to be forgiven of sin is through something innocent dying, pointing to Jesus. We die physically, we covered last week, because we no longer have access to the tree of life because man got kicked out of the garden where the tree of life was because God didn't want sinful man to live forever. So we die spiritually the moment we sin against an all-knowing, all-powerful God in our rebellion. We die physically because we don't get the tree of life. And we see that there's also established through the Old Testament before Exodus laws and covenants. Four of them that I see. And the one is that there's animal sacrifices we've already covered. And God gives us a conscience. God says in Romans 1, we all have a conscience. We're created in the image of God. So when we're doing something different than what we are created to do, there's a conscience that says, man, I shouldn't murder. I shouldn't commit adultery. I shouldn't steal. And so that's a law that's working before Exodus comes with the Ten Commandments. We also have God promising to Noah after the flood of Noah that all but eight people are destroyed. God summarizes things with Noah and says, okay, along with the conscience, here's the big, big, big deal. Don't murder. You know, tell people, you know, Noah's sons and their wives and their the children after them all knew from what God told Noah and the rainbow in the sky, I'm not going to destroy the world with a flood anymore, but don't shed man's blood. The biggie for God. Because in a sense, you know, we're created in the image of God. When we're murdering somebody, we're murdering somebody that God created. And that is an offense to God. And we also see the covenant with Abraham where God told Abraham that the Messiah would come through him and that the Jews, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob in the future, the Jews would be the promised people of God. And see, that was known. So before Exodus happens, there's no law. There's no written codified law that we consider, you know, the Ten Commandments and the 613. But the Jews know they're the promised people and they're going to inherit the land of Israel because Abraham passed it down for all the hundreds of years, 500 years until that happens. And so they know they're the promised people. They know they're going to get the land. And that's important for our study today. Because they would have been thinking like, that ain't going to happen. Because the Egyptians are going to kill us all. And so here's the lesson. This study of 3,500 years ago history applies to us even recently. It applied to the Jews during the Holocaust. They were feeling the same way I bet you the Jews back in Exodus were thinking. God told us he's going to restore us to the land. We're the special people. But this Hitler guy, he's wiping us all out. We're all going to be gone. And how could we possibly ever get back in the land? But they got there. And we can say through the trials of life that are coming, God, I'm now a child of God. I'm an adopted child of God. You've promised me great things, everlasting life, but the world hates me. All these things are going wrong in my life. This message today is for us. Because we can in this world, Jesus says, you will have tribulation, but what? Be of good cheer, because he's overcome the world. And we know we can look to the future and trust him in what he's told us. You know, for us, it's not the promised land here on earth, it's he's going to take us home. And so that's very, very important. And the laws that will come are relationship between God and man, relationship between man and man, and the sacrificial system. That's what Exodus is all about, which we'll be getting to. So this week we're going to emphasize the plight that the Jews were under in Egypt. So Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, 12 sons, Joseph goes to Egypt, long story that you can read. And he saves the Jew and Gentiles because he interprets a dream. And at first, they say Joseph and the Jews are looked up on, but then things change. Exodus 1:8. Now there arose a new king over Egypt, where the Jews are living among the Egyptian pagan idol worshippers, who did not know Joseph. And all that Joseph did to save all the Egyptians and make them the most powerful nation there was. And he said to his people, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And it happened in the event of war, and that's important, in the event of war, they're worried about the men. They also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land. Now, should they have been concerned that they would go up out of the land? What do you think the chance is that Pharaoh actually knew what Abraham had been promised by God 500 years earlier? See, Abraham was told, this land that you're wandering around in, your descendants, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 sons, they're going to be wandering around in this land, and they're going to be wandering around in another land where they're going to be oppressed, and then after 400 years total, I'm going to be bringing you into the land of Israel. Now, do you think the Jews passed that down? Do you think Abraham told Isaac? You think Isaac told Jacob? You think that's one of those things you want to know? Like, 1492, Columbus sailed the blue. You know, you want to know that. You want to know George Washington crossing the... You know these big historical events that deal with the promises of God Almighty to your people. And do you think that Pharaoh would have known? And so there would have been a mindset, and this is conjecture, but it's biblical conjecture. You know, it's based on the Bible, that Pharaoh going, look, we know that their prophecy of their God was that they're gonna get out of the land. They're gonna get out of here. Well, how are they gonna do that? They're gonna rise up and kill us. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. Now, what could they have done? They could have met with the Jewish leaders and said, you know what? Even though we worship fish gods and frog gods and sacrifice our children and commit every kind of perversion, you know, we ignore the conscience that God has given us as Egyptians because we're just a bunch of idol worshippers. But we really, you know, your God is the God that flooded the world. Your God is the God that did all these miraculous things, and he said you're leaving in about 400 years. Can we make some deal about how that happens? Peacefully? But God rose up Pharaoh and all the arrogance and the pride of being considered God in the eyes of the Egyptians so that that wouldn't happen. Why? Because it didn't happen, we're talking about the Exodus this many thousands of years later. And you know what? When the Jews came out of Egypt, the nations around them were all in fear because the God of the Jews did what he promised he would do. He destroyed the nation of Egypt. And we should really think twice about what we're doing. And so God I was talking to a friend today, he goes, everything that God has done through history is for the sovereign purpose of making sure he receives all the glory and honor and praise throughout history, and I'll add to that, and to ensure the most number of people that are going to be born with rebellion are going to repent and turn to him because they see the obvious power of what happens when you reject the God who so loved us that he sent Jesus. You are doing it to your own damnation. You're doing it to your own hurt. And there's all these examples of that. Go ahead. You want to fight God? Go ahead. Have fun. I'm not going to do that. And he's a good God. You know, it's one thing to submit to a tyrant because he's a tyrant that can blow you away. It's another thing to submit to an all-knowing, all-powerful, loving God who has done everything to minister to us and to take our place in sin and to love us and send his son to die for us. And he created this world in color. I want to go worship that God. And he's not a tyrant. He's a loving God. So they were afraid of them going up out of the land. And I think that's possibly why. So they set taskmasters over them. Instead of just submitting to God, they started to try and destroy the Jews. And they built, they made the Jews build Pharaoh's supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they, the Egyptians, afflicted them, the Jews, the more they, the Jews, multiplied and grew. And they, Egyptians, were in dread of the children of Israel. And again, I think they were in dread. Something's going to happen. These people are going to get us. And so the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor. But we can outdo their God. We can so oppress these people that we can make sure the plan of God or the promises of God, the prophecies of God don't happen. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. Meaning, what are you going to do today? I'm going to go and hopefully my Egyptian taskmaster doesn't beat me to death because I dropped a rock or did this or did that. And you come home and you're just miserable. You worked hard labor all day long with rigor. Can you imagine the entire nation just under that oppression? And if you put yourself in the Jewish moccasins, sandals, whatever, again, they're thinking, God, you promised Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and you've done these miraculous things, but why? Where are you, God? You ever felt led to just like, where are you? Things are going bad. God is there. And he told us what's happening. And he told us in James, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the trials are to work patience in you, to use you. And through destruction, it's ashes to glory, and suffering brings joy and peace. They could have, should have just said, you know what? God's in control. It's okay. They kill us. We go to be with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're believing and trusting in him, and all of our misery is going to be over. Life is, even though they didn't have the book of James yet, they know life is just a vapor that appears for a moment and then is gone. And then if you've been worshiping and serving the God of creation, you're going to go be with him. And besides that, God knows what he's doing. He promised us he's going to get us out of here, and that means he's going to get us out of here. And how he does it, he'll do it the best way to bring glory to his name and to put the fear in the nations around us so that they too can realize that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is the real God, and their fish gods, their frog gods, and all these other gods are no gods at all. And so we can be okay with the way God wants to do things, right? Remember that when bad times come to America. We might have to just remember that. It's okay, God. Life is short. Eternity is long. Exodus 1:15. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives. And some people think that the way the wording is that it says that it means the midwives to the Hebrews, meaning it could have been Egyptian midwives that were ministering, that were midwives to the Hebrews, or they were Hebrew midwives ministering to the Hebrews. And there's only two of them mentioned here. And some think that they were also in charge of everybody else, because there's probably not just two midwives over a nation of people. And so they would have been called in by Pharaoh. Either way, really doesn't matter. Either way, these midwives are called into Pharaoh. And he says to them, of whom the name of one was Shiphrah and the name of the other was Puah. And he said to them, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women, and you see them on the birth stools, meaning they're about ready to have a child, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. Now, our title today is, But the Midwives Feared God. If you've got a pen there, put your name in there. Because there's going to be times, there have been recently times where the government, Pharaoh, where the government tells us to do something that we must not do if we fear God. And it happens All the time, people's jobs are at stake now in America. Can you imagine that? That for you to want to serve God and do what He tells you to do, you can lose your job, lose everything else. And I'm sure these midwives, what do you think Pharaoh said? Please, and if you don't do it, well, you know, that's okay. You'll get your paycheck anyway. You think he's going to say that? So there, I mean, again, not clearly said, but this was probably, or else. You do this, you murder Jewish children, or else. But they feared God. They said, we're not going to do it. Now, do the Chinese do population control? So what is their one-child policy? What is their policy in China? You kill the daughters. Now, why is that? Well, I mean, even when they control animal populations, what do? If they want to control the population from getting too high, they don't kill the males. They kill the females. Why? Because they're the ones that give birth. Well, not anymore. I mean, males can give birth, right? So, but I just to make sure that you're all not woke. So, if anybody said, yeah, Kevin, preach it. I go, what? That was a test. You failed. So why are they killing the males, do you think? I mean, if you were to continue that policy, how long would it be that the Jews would be a threat to the nation of Egypt? Just one generation. I mean, why? Because all you got is Jewish women. And when you get to the point where you're almost all just Jewish women, then what do? You wipe out all the men, you sex traffic all the women into your culture, and you've destroyed the Jewish people. I mean, again, it doesn't say, but that was their conniving plan. We will do this to eliminate the Jews. Right now, get rid of the men population, and then we can do that for a while, and then the men will die off in rigor, and then they're not a threat. And then we just take all the women and turn them into Egyptians. That was the plan, apparently. So, let's go to Acts chapter 4, verse 15. Acts chapter 4, verse 15. Because of this whole COVID thing, the church was in a big tizzy about this because we had the government giving us all kind of edicts, right? And there were people, pastors all over the map, churches all over the map. You know, if you're a real Christian, you'll do what Fauci and the government says to do. They're our authority, and we've been told by God, this is what we got to do. And then there's other people that said, no, Jesus is the head of the church, and he says we're supposed to meet, and he says we're supposed to pray for one another. And they're all worried about people dying physically. What is Jesus all worried about? People dying spiritually. And what is the mission of the church? To educate the people that are saved so they can be evangelists over in the world and help people that are dying and going to hell. See, we're worried about people dying physically from whatever, right? I mean, not worried, but I mean, we just know that happens. But that what our real concern is, did they know Jesus when they died? That's our mission as a church. And so if we're not gathering for a year or 2 years, they could have shut us down forever if they wanted to, could have gotten away with it. If we're not educating each other and just filling in that spiritual emphasis, reminding ourselves we're not here for the physical temporary, we're here for the eternal spiritual. And, you know, we're also listening to God and realizing they're lying to us in all these different ways. Why should we listen to liars and then go and try and do something that's different than what God told us to do? And we see Peter and John doing the same thing. After Jesus is resurrected, after the day of Pentecost, Peter, even knowing that Jesus went and preached and they arrested him and crucified him, he knows that just to go and preach again in Jerusalem is possibly a death sentence. He doesn't care. He wants to do what God said, go into the whole world and preach this message. So he's going. He runs into a lame guy sitting at the eastern gate. And he says, silver and gold have I none, such as I have give I thee. And this man born lame from the womb stands up and leaps and walks. And then goes in to preach a sermon. He's told he's arrested. He's arrested and you would think the Jews who killed Jesus sealed the tomb, and they know it's not that the people stole the body away. They paid the people to tell that lie, but they know that's not what happened. They know Jesus rose from the grave. And then they see Pentecost, where all these new Jesuses, all these people that are filled with the Spirit of God and now are preaching the same message, they know that's happening. And you would think they go, okay, let's give up. Let's give up and let's just embrace the fact that Peter and John are sharing with people the truth that Jesus came and taught us for 3 years. But they don't. And, you know, this is one thing we realize, and it explains so much of our world. People in power, Satan inspires people through their pride and arrogance and stuff to get up to the pinnacles of power. And that's what we see in our government today. And they do it, Satan does it so he can, through them, accomplish his goals instead of God's goals. And once they get that power, they'll do anything to keep that power. You can prove to them Jesus healed all these people. Peter's now healing. This is a God thing. And you can give it to them in spades. They can see it. They can hear it. But they're so possessed. They're so overcome with the deception of Satan that they just stay stuck on rebellion against God. And so it's not surprising for us to see the same thing in our government. But verse 15, these religious leaders then rebuked Peter, but when they had commanded them, Peter and John, to go aside out of the council where they had been berating them, they conferred among themselves, saying, "What shall we do to these men? For indeed that a notable miracle has been done through them is evident to all who dwell in Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it." Well, then give up. if you can't deny it, then give up. Stop persecuting these Christians. But that's not what they do. Deny it. Verse 17. But so that it spreads no further, good luck with that, among the people, let us severely threaten them, that from now on they speak to no man in this name. Same as Exodus. Let's threaten them. You do this. You preach Jesus again, and we'll come beat you. We might even just crucify you just like Jesus. Give it your best shot. They go on to say, not exactly that. So they called them and commanded them not to speak at all nor teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said to them, "Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard." So when they had further threatened them, they let them go, finding no way of punishing them because of the people, since they all glorified God for what had been done. So power in numbers. See, if the people hadn't thrown a fit, you know, against the religious leaders, what do you mean? That was a miracle of God. This man was born lame. And he just spoke the word, and all these muscles appeared on his legs, and he's jumping and leaping, and he took the high jump at the Olympics. And, well, who knows how high he was jumping? Like, how could that happen? So because people resisted the tyranny that was coming to us, they didn't get everything they wanted to accomplish. Aren't we glad that they wanted us all to do what they wanted us to do? So being careful on YouTube here. But people push back, and it's good to push back against tyranny and do what God tells us to do. And you know the other thing, they weren't saying, "And you know what, we're armed, we're going to take all you guys out. You try and mess with us, we're going to take you out." They didn't say that. "If you guys decide whether you have to kill us or not, but we're going to do what God says." See, that's the thing that we have to remember. We still, in a way, Peter and John were still submitting to the government. Because they were saying, "We're just going to do what God told us to do. If you've got a problem with that, then you can do what you need to do." And we'll talk more about that. And let's turn to Romans chapter 13:1. This is what everybody that was wanting to, all the pastors that were wanting to lock their people down and everything, this is what they were pointing to, along with, while you're turning to Romans 13:1, I'll read Titus 3:1, which is another verse. "Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men." So right there, speak to them, obey, you know, speak to them to be subject to rulers and obey them. Unless God tells us to do something different. Now, and the debate, you know, during COVID was, well, I mean, the Bible doesn't say that if there's a pandemic, just ignore it and continue to meet. It doesn't say that you're not supposed to get a vaccination, or it doesn't say this. But it all filters in when they say shut down the church, when God has told us what the church is supposed to do. And we were just saying, hey, we're going to be open as long as if people want to come, I'm here. You know, we're here to minister to people's spiritual needs. If you feel like there's a problem with that, that you could get sick or whatever, because they're promising, by the way, Fauci did promise another pandemic is coming next year, and he's really good at predicting them, so it's going to come. So this is actually a preamble to what's going to happen. When it happens again, personally, unless I die of whatever it is, and they're saying it's going to be much more virulent this time, there's going to be people here to minister to the spiritual needs of whoever wants to come. That's what we're going to do. And if I'm dead, Dustin. And if Dustin's dead, then you know, everybody has to be. We're worried about the spiritual needs of people. And so Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. Now this is Paul writing this, right? Now, did the Roman government make it clear that they did not want people teaching about Jesus in the kingdom of Rome? Did Rome make it clear, you know what? Caesar says, I'm God. There's no other God. So don't be you Christians who are going around and talking about this Jesus that's God, and that his kingdom is coming and he's going to be glorified and powerful. That's me. You can't do that. Did Paul keep doing it? He did. So we have to put everything in context. He's writing this in the sense that, yeah, you're subject to authorities as long as they're not telling you to do something that God says, you know. If God tells you to do it, you do it. Even if the authorities say don't. And it's the other way around, too. We obey God rather than man. Who resists will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror for good works, but to evil. And so some people say, well, you know, our government is so evil and wicked, that means we don't have to listen to a thing they say because they're so wicked. Was the Roman government wicked? The Roman government was horribly wicked. And Paul is writing this even though they're horribly wicked. But, you know, their dealing with evildoers was better than what we are right now. I mean, they were actually a government that had the sword to deal with people that if you robbed, you're going to get killed. If you murdered, you're going to get killed. If you want to do these crazy things, you're going to get killed. And so the purpose of government is to keep us all from being anarchists, to do it ourselves. The government's supposed to be working as God to quell, to restrain evildoers. That's the mission. Well, if you just wipe out the government, that doesn't happen. Go ask how France is doing right now. Ask how Haiti's doing right now. When government completely shuts down because people go into anarchy and just take things into their own hands, it creates a horrible situation. Even worse. For he is God's minister to you for good. The government needs to maintain order or you're living in anarchy. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake, because God's told you. Do it because God told you. Christians should not be anarchists. We should obey the government in the things that they do to maintain whatever societal order there is, but when they step over the line and they tell the church what to do, when God is the head of the church, then you don't do what they say. You obey God and you say, whatever. There was one particular day we were open. We knew we weren't supposed to be open. We weren't social distancing or anything else. I just felt, you know, two things happened that I won't take the time for, but I thought for sure a cop's going to come. And people said, Kevin, you know, because we heard something was going on. And they said, Kevin, should we put on masks and everything? Which we know masks don't work, so that's why we didn't put them on. But I said, at first I'm thinking, yeah, put a image that we're complying of. And I thought, no, we're going to stick with the truth. We're going to do that. And I had already decided if they come in, I was going to say, come on in, officer, you know, explain to us what the problem is. And then I'm going to explain what I'm going to do. And if anybody's going to get arrested, it's going to be me and we're going to go out. I mean, that was my decision in my mind what's going to happen. That we're not going to fake anything. We're just going to No, and I'm going to explain to you and to the congregation why we're not complying. Because Jesus is the head of the church. And by the way, we never lost a single person in COVID. And when the whole world was in a mask, the diseases did not go away. When they went to two masks, the diseases didn't go away. It had nothing to do with that mask working. It had everything to do with how much are they complying with us. Can we look out there and see who's listening to us, even though it makes no scientific sense? Because we've now got them. And I had a guy from the health department basically say that. He said, Kevin, what's the problem? Because everybody's going along with what we're saying because of the mask. And I know we're digressing, and you know, we want to keep that in the past. I was so glad when Russia started the war, because then all of a sudden the pandemic was gone. Did you notice that? I mean, I would sit at the TV and go, are we ever, ever going to get over this? The war started and bam, it's gone. So war stopped pandemics. And so anyway, let's go back to verse 17 of Exodus chapter 1. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said, why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive? Now, they could have said, well, because we decided that our conscience tells us we're not supposed to murder. If there were Hebrew midwives, they're saying, our God, we believe in the God who said to Noah, better not kill children or anybody. And we fear him more than you. Do what you want to do. But that's not what they said. The midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them. And it is true, you know, if you're in really good shape, you're going to have children better than if you're sitting around sucking your leeks and onions down while the Jews are doing all the work for you. And all the other problems that the Egyptians would have had with adultery and sexual immorality and idol worship and sacrificing their children and everything else. God blesses the people that obey God with fertility, with being fertile and being able to produce children. So they lied about why, but God hates lying, doesn't he? So is this a good thing or not? I mean, was it good that they lied if God says he hates lying? Well, therefore God dealt well with the midwives, verse 20. And the people multiplied and grew very mighty. Let's turn to Proverbs 6:16. You know, where does it say God hates lying? In Proverbs 6. But although God hates lying, one thing you'll find if you read through the whole Bible, is this the only time somebody lied and was actually commended by God? No. But what we're going to learn here is, one, God really does hate it when we lie. But you'll see a pattern that if you're lying to prevent people from being murdered, then it's not a sin in the eyes of God. If you're saying something to keep people from being murdered, then you're not lying to sin in the eyes of God. And it can even be at times, if you're lying, to even preserve your own life, unless you're doing it because you say, you know, do you believe in Jesus? If you say you believe in Jesus, we're going to kill you. That one, you can't preserve yourself. You can't deny God to save your own skin. But we're going to just look at a couple of things here. But Proverbs 6:16. Six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. The first one, a proud look. Because a proud look is everything, right? I'm prideful. What does that mean? I've eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I'm going to decide what's good and evil. And nobody tells me what to do. Absolutely nobody tells me what to do. And I'm going to be prideful against God and man. And God hates that because it's the first step. Pride is the source of all sin. A lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. Would Pharaoh go in with that? Can you imagine? I mean, God hated the fact that Pharaoh is making an order to slaughter the children of Israel. Does he hate it when Planned Parenthood does that? Absolutely. Does he hate it when politicians vote for it and make it the platform of their political party? Is that, does God hate that? That our party's mission, our stamp of honor, our badge of honor is that we kill children in the womb. And we'll use your tax dollars for it. And we're going to have people do that. And I want to always stop when I say this. I bet you everybody here has been affected in one way or another by the abortion and Holocaust. And aren't you glad that God recognizes that there is all manner of sin? And he says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. But what we do is we agree with God as Christians. We agree and we say, I was a sinner. I was a murderer like David. I murdered, but as you forgave David, you can forgive me. And I can have everlasting life with you, and you've wiped my record of wrong away. See that? But we still have to just call a spade. It's murder is what's happening in our country today. And God sees it. And when we accolade it, fight about it, you know, tax dollars about it, it stirs up the anger of God. And how does the anger of God ultimately get stirred up into what? Judgment. And so we watch this movie on the sex trafficking, Sound of Freedom. You watch that and you sit there and you get so convinced. Judgment has to be coming soon. And you see the abortion industry. You see judgment's going to be coming soon. And so if I lose some of my pleasures in life, some of the things that I enjoy about American freedom, and I see those going away because of the judgment of God, I have to be okay with it because I'm going to a place with total freedom, total joy, total peace forever when God gets me out of here. Hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans. All the people love Pharaoh. Hey, let's do this. And it was actually, again, it was totally wicked. It was, we're going to get them, we're going to hone down on, we're going to decrease the number of males, and then we're going to kill them all, and we're going to take the women. I mean, that's an evil, wicked plan. Feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. God hates it when, he's talking brethren, spreads discord among the Jewish tribes, spread discord among the church and stuff. God hates that because that's what Satan wants to do, is spread discord and then get us all fighting against each other and not doing what God told us to do. Let's turn to Joshua 2:2. And we covered this recently in our Book of Hebrews study, chapter 11. But it's worth repeating here for the purposes of understanding lying. Now, the background of Rahab is looking into the future of Exodus, past Exodus. The first city that's to be conquered is Jericho. Jericho's right on the west side of the Jordan River. They're the first city that's supposed to be conquered by the Jews who have just escaped Egypt. The 10 plagues have come upon Egypt, destroyed the country of Egypt. The Red Sea parted. And the men of Jericho and women of Jericho, they know they're Canaanites destined for judgment, and they're idol worshippers and everything else, and they're trusting in their walls to save them. But the spies, there's two spies that Joshua sentenced to the city. So they must have dressed up like Canaanites, slipped into the city, and they go to Rahab the harlot, because that's where you're going to get all the scoop on what's going on in town. And Rahab the harlot says, you guys are Jews, and this whole city is fearful of you. And you know what? I know that your God is the true God. I know your God is going to be judging this place. And rightfully so. But I want to call upon the mercy of your God, and I want your God to spare me and my family. And God says, he will. So even a person that's supposed to be judged as soon as they cry out, God, you're God, and I want to stop rebelling. I want your mercy. That's when God says, okay, we got a deal. Because I don't take any pleasure in the judgment of the wicked, it says in Ezekiel. I take no pleasure that the wicked has to be judged, but that the wicked would turn from his wicked way and have life. So here she is, a harlot in a pagan nation, and God is going to save her. And so it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country. So somehow, you know, the spies of Jericho somehow figured out these two guys came from the Hebrew camp to sneak into the city. And so the king of Jericho is told, hey, there's two Hebrews here. So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country. They came to search out our defenses. Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. Was that the truth? Okay. She lied. And it happened as the gate was being shut when it was dark that the men went out. Not the truth. Where the men went, I do not know. Not the truth. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. Not the truth. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. Was that a good thing that she did? In the eyes of God, yes, it was. How do we know for sure, Kevin? You speculating again? No. James, Hebrews says, Hebrews 11:31, by faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. And James says in 2:24, you see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. I believe in your God. He's the true God. He deserves to punish us all. Punish me. I'm appealing to his mercy. Will you give me mercy? Sure. And then knock, knock on the door. Here they are. Here's the spies. Kill them. No. Why would she do that? To save her life. But if she thinks that surrendering her life to the life, to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and Creator of the universe, and who cares what man will do to me? I only care about what this God of Israel does, and I just want his mercy. She lives forever. It's proof that what she thought about the God of Israel wasn't just telling the guys what they wanted to hear until they leave. It proves that she actually believed it. So, you know, there's a lot of people that, yeah, they give lip service. Yeah, I'm a born-again Christian. Yeah, I'm that. But then, really, does their life show it? If somebody does come to them and put a gun to their head and said, so you believe in Jesus now? That's when you know. That's when you absolutely know. Just like Cassie Brunell in Columbine High School, my hometown, when the two killers came into the library and she's sitting at the library table and they said, so you believe in Jesus now? Because she used to be with them. Cassie Brunell used to be with the Gothics in the school of Columbine. And they were after her. And they went in. She's the only one that's sitting at the table. She's sitting at the library table she was sitting and everybody else is trying to go for cover. And I know that from a person who was there. Told me what happened. Told me exactly what happened just a couple, 3 weeks after the Columbine massacre. Yeah, we were all under the table. I didn't see what happened but we saw Cassie's feet. They're just, right there, she just sits there. So you believe in God now? Short pause. Yes, bang. So, you know, she could realize, I'm telling my own people a lie. And if they find out, they kill me, I don't care. I'm gonna do it for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So, Exodus 1:20. So again, to save people from getting killed, it's a work of faith to not let killers just kill people. And, you know, when we were arrested in China, taking Bibles in, you know, same thing. What are we, going to tell them? Oh, okay, yeah, you're the government. You want us to know where, how did we start with the Bibles and where did we go and who's in charge? Not going to happen. And at the time, we had no idea whether they were going to keep us there forever or not. But one thing I, you know, in my mind, it's like, not going to happen. We're not going to tell them. And then they tell me they want me to sign a thing that's in Chinese, and I go, "You got to be kidding me!" For all I know, this is to make me reenlist in the Navy. I'm not going to do that. But anyway, Exodus 1:20. Therefore, God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and grew very mighty. And so it was because the midwives feared God that He provided households for them. Now, what does that mean? We don't know what it means. Except it could have been, okay, you guys are fired as midwives. You're gonna starve. You're gonna lose your job. And because they did what God wanted them to do, He provided households for them, people that took care of them because they weren't killing the children. You know, it's really easy. Don't murder people for the government or anybody else. And you're pleasing God. No matter what happens after that, it's all good. Verse 22, Exodus 1:22. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, "Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive." Forget you midwives. And this is where I think he fired them all. I mean, he just got rid of them. You guys aren't going to listen to me. He might have even executed some of them. Who knows? But then he sends the whole country. Any of you Egyptians that hear any baby crying or anything else, you just bust into their houses, into their tent, whatever. You see a male child, you throw him in the river. Wicked rulers will do anything to stay in power. You know, it's kind of funny because when they're tearing down all the statutes of slave owners and all this other stuff, people started realizing some of the hypocrisy associated with that by one that they otherwise consider a darling of their mission. Who would that be? Anybody remember? Who started Planned Parenthood? Her name was Margaret Sanger. She started. She's the originator of Planned Parenthood. And they had to deal with the fact that she made some really amazing statements, including in her autobiography. And here's one of the things she said. You know, the article, this is from USAtoday.com, not known for being a bastion of conservative thought. And this was in 2020, July of 2020. Removes statues of Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood founder, tied to eugenics and racism. You know, if we're going to remove all these statues, we probably, to be consistent, we should remove her. Because she said things like this. Must join the list in promoting birth control. She advanced a controversial Negro project, wrote in her autobiography about speaking to Ku Klux Klan group, and advocated for eugenics, which is getting rid of people that you don't want, a eugenics approach to breeding for gradual suppression, elimination, and eventual extinction of defective stocks. Those human weeds which threaten the blooming of the finest flowers of American civilization. Originator of Planned Parenthood. You know why she started? Let's kill the black babies in America. They're the weeds. We need to kill them all. And who has suffered the most in the abortion holocaust of this country? The black people. And you know why? Because she considers them substandard. You know why? Because she was an evolutionist. And so you applied eugenics by evolutionists because we decide, well, I look in the mirror and I'm superior. So they must be further, you know, they're behind in the advancement of the species, so it's okay to kill them. She went on to say, like the abortion lobby today, Sanger urged Dr. Gamble, a black doctor, which she was rebuked for using a black doctor, but she had a reason for it. To enlist the help of spiritual leaders to justify their deadly work, writing, she wrote, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members." She wrote that. So, is this 3,500 years ago? Doesn't relate to us. Doesn't have any meaning in our culture and everything today. The Bible is alive, and it's just as real today as it was 3,500 years ago. Men are wicked, have been wicked throughout history. God's people that fear him, it's the God-fearing people that shut down the slave trade. It is the God-fearing people that are saying we need to shut down abortion. And not only because it's murdering children, but because we don't want to live in a country that suffers the wrath and judgment of God, because it just kind of messes everything up. And we need to tell people, what's your position on this? I fear God, like the midwives. We should not be doing this, because this is wicked in the eyes of God, because we're created in the image of God, and it doesn't matter what the population is. We just do what God says, and he'll take care of the rest. That's our biblical view. We'll save chapter 2 for next week. But think about this. Leave us with this thought before we get into chapter 2, where Moses is now comes on the scene. Think of the hopelessness of the Jews at this time. I would imagine, I don't know, we weren't there, the Bible doesn't say. But let's speculate. When the edict is, get rid of the midwives, we can't trust them. Egyptians go around and find every baby and kill it. Do you think they did that? Almost certainly they did. So within the Jewish families, you're having to worry about a baby that cries. And we find out Moses, you know, Moses' mother kept him for 3 months. And then it's like, okay, it's not going to work after that. They're going to catch us. And I would imagine we catch you with your baby because you didn't throw him in the river. You know, we're telling you to throw him in the river. If you don't do it, we're going to do it. And if you don't tell us and we have to do it, we'll kill you too. That's probably what happened. And the people would have been just like, God, we're done. We're dead. They're going to kill all of our boys. How is this going to happen? You promised Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, that we're the promised people, we're going to do this and everything. There would have been extreme anxiety among the people. And right at that moment, God shows up. And he hears the cries of the people. And he selects Moses. He selects this family that is not going to do it, not going to care what's going to happen to them by doing it. And they trust God. Instead of just throwing them in the river, they put them in the ark, the exact same Hebrew word for the ark of Noah. And they trust God. In a way, we'll obey. We'll throw them in the river with a boat. And we're going to just trust God that somehow it's all going to work out. And not only does it work out, but then Pharaoh's daughter gets it. And you know, again, putting two and two together, Moses, 40 years later, is coming back. Are there any men among the Jews? There's hundreds of thousands of them, according to the numbers. So what must have happened? The policy must have been changed. They must have changed the policy of just throwing the male babies, into the river. Otherwise, when Moses comes back 40 years, all he's got is a bunch of women to go across to have the Red Sea part for. And so they must have changed it. And why did it change? I bet you it was just the pushback and Pharaoh's daughter going, Daddy, look at this beautiful little baby. And you want to kill all these people? I don't want to be a daughter. I mean, again, I'm speculating. But something had to change, or there would have been no men when Moses came back 40 years later. So we'll pick that up next week. We'll pick it up, chapter 2. Isn't God good? All we do is trust him. We just trust him. It's all going to work out. And right now we're trusting him to use us, the church, in this decrepit time of our history to be a light on a hill for those that are lost and don't know their way and are being confused by the enemy of their souls. And we appeal to them. You can trust Jesus. Just like Rahab the harlot. Rahab, you're a harlot. You deserve to be judged. But you can come to Jesus and you can have everlasting life. And that's our message. And he's going to use us till he takes us home. Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for the hope that you've given us. We thank you that you have, throughout all of history, shown yourself faithful to keep promises, even though it comes on the heels of great tribulation among your people and on your people. And we know that the world is headed to a time of trouble, but we know that you have a plan that glorifies you. And we want to just be doing our job, Lord, that you commissioned us with to go out into the world and to preach your gospel until you come. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand and worship God.
What's it like in heaven, Saint, with the streets paved in gold? Do you rejoice with our loved ones? Have you met the saints of old? Were you ushered in by God's angels through the pearly gate? As they opened, how did you feel when you saw the Master's face? Did you bow before His Majesty who sits upon the throne, saying, praise, glory, and honor belong to you and you alone? What's it like in heaven, Saint, as you kneel before the throne, giving Jesus all the glory as He welcomes you to your home? What's it like in heaven, Saint, as God wiped away your tears when He placed your crown upon you? Did you hear the angels cheer? Have you eaten from the tree of life in the paradise of God? Have you looked upon the river that flows from the throne above? Is the place that's been prepared for you like nothing ever seen before? What's it like in heaven, Saint, where you live forevermore? What's it like in heaven, Saint, as you kneel before the throne, giving Jesus all the glory as He welcomes you to your home? Did you bow before His Majesty who sits upon the throne, saying, praise, glory, and honor belong to you and you alone? What's it like in heaven, Saint, as you kneel before the throne, giving Jesus all the glory as He welcomes you to your home, giving Jesus all the glory as He welcomes you to your home?
Day is going to come when that happens. God is going to give us that precious home. We're going to be there, and we can just rejoice until that day comes. And may God bless you, keep you in His care until we can fellowship again. Amen.